Good evening. For WVAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Wednesday, May 17th, 2017. The White House, Republicans and Democrats are in turmoil over actions, statements, and tweets by Donald Trump. Tuesday night, there was the bombshell report by the Washington Post that Trump revealed classified information from Israeli intelligence to Russian diplomats. This in a meeting in the Oval Office last week. Last night, the New York Times reported that Trump asked former FBI Director James Comey to stop investigating former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn. Here's a wrap of recent events from late-night comedy host Seth Meyers. It's in his Closer Look segment starting with May 8th.
But let's just take a second to think about how insane the last 8 days have been. On Monday, we learned that then-President Obama warned Trump not to hire former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. On Tuesday, Trump fired FBI Director James Comey, which Comey found out about on TV. On Wednesday, he met in the Oval Office with Russian diplomats, including an accused Russian spy. On Thursday, he admitted that he fired Comey specifically because of the Russian investigation. On Friday, he threatened Comey with secret tapes of their conversations. On Saturday, the Justice Department began interviewing new candidates for FBI director. Yesterday, we learned that Trump gave the Russians highly classified information. And today, we learned that Trump asked Comey to shut down the FBI's investigation into Flynn. And if you're wondering why I didn't mention Sunday, that was Mother's Day. So obviously, Trump was doing what all normal husbands do, spending the day alone on the golf course in a different state. Which, in fairness, is the best gift he could have given her.
In addition, 5 days ago on May 12th, Trump tweeted, James Comey better hope that there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press, exclamation point. This is perceived as a threat by many who demand to know if Trump has been taping in the White House and if there really is a tape of conversations with Comey. The former FBI director, suspicious of Trump motives, has kept a written log of all his conversations with Trump. This is according to many sources. And today, the Senate Intelligence Committee said it wants former FBI director Comey to appear before the panel in both open and closed sessions. It's also asking acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe to give the committee any notes Comey might have made regarding discussions he had with the White House or Justice Department officials about Russia's efforts to influence the election. Comey wrote a memo after one February meeting at the White House stating that Trump had asked him to shut down the FBI's investigation of ousted National Security Advisor Flynn. Newspaper headlines around the country were full of all of this. Here in New York, the cover on the New York Daily News in red lettering says, Comey memo says Trump told him, make it go away, make it go away in large black type. Under it, urged FBI boss to drop Flynn Russia inquiry. The cover on the New York Post, usually Trump-friendly, said, Comey memo, Trump asked me to nix Flynn probe with, I hope you can do this, in giant white type, superimposed over a photo of Trump. Even that paper you get at hotels, the U.S. News and World Report headline reads, Let This Go, memo claims, Trump pressed Comey to close Flynn probe. What's going on with Trump and his administration over the last few days seems to be an assault on the rule of law. Faiza Patel is co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center.
You know, what we've seen over the last several days has been kind of an extraordinary sequence of events, which started with the firing of the FBI director, James Comey. Shortly after that, we learned that, at least it was reported in the news media, that Trump had fired Comey because he was investigating Trump's connections to Russia. Then Trump himself went on television and said that when he fired Comey, in fact, he had been thinking about the whole Trump-Russia investigation. And then yesterday we find out that Comey had contemporaneous notes of his conversations with the president in which the president asked him to basically stop an ongoing investigation. All of these things suggest that the president was actually interfering with ongoing FBI work to the benefit of his political allies and his campaign people who had worked on his campaign. Now, one of the most basic things that we have in our democracy is a kind of system of checks and balances, and different agencies have independent mandates. And the mandate of the FBI is to conduct investigations into potential criminal activity. Now, criminal activity can take place when, you know, somebody burgles a house or commits a murder, but it is also possible that criminal activity emanates from the White House, from the very sort of top of the government. And so it's critical to the rule of law that the investigations of the FBI are allowed to proceed independently and without interference from the political branches.
We're speaking with Faiza Patel from the Brennan Center for Justice. So are we looking at obstruction of justice, or are we looking at abuses of power, if in fact all of this is true?
Well, an obstruction of justice basically requires that somebody tries to interfere with an ongoing investigation. And a lot of it turns on the intent of the person. Now, you know, there's sort of a couple of different ways in which this could potentially be an obstruction of justice. One is by putting pressure on the FBI director to actually discontinue an ongoing investigation into something that's actually very, very serious, which is, you know, ties between top national security officials and a foreign government. The second way in which this could be obstruction of justice is by actually, asking the FBI director to not pursue these investigations. So they're two slightly different things. One is actually, you know, saying, don't do this investigation, and I'm your boss and I'm telling you not to do this. And the second one is to say, well, you didn't listen to me, so now I'm going to fire you. So both of those could be independent bases for justification. Now, as you point out, you know, a lot of this is, well, he said, right? There are differing accounts of what happened what actually transpired in these meetings between the president and the FBI director. But if what has been alleged by Comey and his surrogates and all of the information that has come out in the press is true, it raises a very serious possibility that the president was in fact trying to interfere with an ongoing investigation.
And so what about the justifications that have been used, the White House damage control, McMaster's at the White House defending Trump's firing of FBI Director Comey, and then just yesterday at a White House briefing saying Trump has the legal right to share classified intelligence information. Does the power of the presidency give Trump a free pass or not?
Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by a free pass. I mean, it is very hotly debated as to whether or not a sitting president can actually be indicted. And you can imagine sort of the difficulty of this, right? The Justice Department reports up to the president through the Attorney General. And, you know, if they decide that the president has actually committed a criminal act, how do they actually go about indicting him? I think there's a lot of thorny questions over there, but accountability can come in other ways as well. And the principal means by which it can come is through an impeachment process, which is a political process that starts in the House and finishes up in the Senate. And we've certainly seen those impeachment processes before where presidents conducted themselves in ways that are, you know, completely out of bounds in our constitutional system. So those things are definitely out there. You know, the fact that the president has the right to fire Comey by itself doesn't really tell us anything because it doesn't talk about the motivations of the president and how that might actually impact the assessment, both legally and in an impeachment proceeding, of the right to fire the FBI director.
So the intent is all important.
The intent is critical when you're looking at a charge of obstruction of justice. And here we have, you know, lots of suggestions as to the intent. Again, you know, a lot of this has not been sort of proved in any way, and there's a lot of he said going on. But if these charges are in fact correct, I think that there's a lot of evidence already, without really much of an investigation having proceeded, that suggests that there is an obstruction of justice concern here.
And finally, what do you expect in the coming days? What can we see?
You know, I don't even really want to get out there and predict anything.
I know, it's kind of crazy, isn't it? It's insane. Things are changing moment by moment.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things that are ongoing, right? So one is that, you know, the chair of the House Intel Committee has asked the FBI to produce the memos that James Comey has written and apparently distributed throughout the FBI relating to his conversations with Trump. And he has asked for those to be produced by the 24th of May. So that's definitely a date that we should be watching. The other thing that could very well happen is that more memos like this are leaked out. You know, based on the reporting, Comey recorded several troubling interactions that he had with the president. And so, you know, there's more paper out there. And if one piece of paper came out, it's entirely likely that these other memos will come out as well. The third thing that one should look for is whether or not there is sufficient pressure being placed on the Deputy Attorney General now to actually appoint a special prosecutor to look into this matter on the theory that the FBI's own investigation has been compromised. And then the last thing is, you know, what other congressional action might take place. And, you know, there has been a call for a special committee to be constituted in order to look into these matters. That could be something that happens. So there's a lot of balls in the air right now. And I think over the next couple of weeks, it will continue to be a roller coaster.
Thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
Faiza Patel is co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. And just a note, WBAI is in the third week of our spring fundraising drive, and we need your support. We need you to call WBAI 516-620-3602 and make a pledge. Go online, give to the number 2, WBAI.org, or do this with your smartphone. Text 41444 and write in WBAI. Again, you text 41444 and write in WBAI. Give us $5, $10, $20. Give us the funding that we need to operate this radio station. Give us the funding that WBAI needs to be strong. And thank you. We'll turn now to some local news. A report from the Community Service Society of New York found that even though 58% of very low-income New Yorkers rely on subways and buses, one out of four can't afford their Metro card. This morning, members of the Riders Alliance, Vocal New York, and other criminal justice reform advocates held a speak out on fair Metro fares. Kenny Mack is with Vocal New York.
I asked the train person to get, can I get on? I have no money. He said no. So I said, I gotta get home. I live in Brooklyn. And I walked through the gate. There was cops there waiting for me. They arrested me. I went in front of a judge. And I got 30 days for jumping the turnstiles.
Max stands in front of the R-Train outside City Hall in this Speak Out for Fair Fares. Craig Levine is with the Bronx Defenders.
This is a speak out and rally in support of the Fair Fare campaign, which is looking to have the city adopt reduced fare Metro cards for the lowest income New Yorkers who cannot afford, literally, to get around the city. They cannot afford to get to their jobs. They cannot afford to get to crucial appointments, treatment, or otherwise, and they literally have to choose between feeding their families, paying their rent, or paying the full price fare, which keeps going up, as you know. And the focus of this Fair Fare rally is by the legal defense organizations in the city. and mine is called the Bronx Defenders. We represent thousands of people every year charged with fare evasion. And we know these people, and they are not just jumping turnstiles to try to get over on somebody. They have to do it because they have to get to court. If they don't get to court, a warrant will be issued for their arrest, and they'll be pulled deeper into the system. Or they have to get to an appointment to comply with a court order or particular services. And again, if they don't do that, they can get deeper into the system. These are the neediest New Yorkers. We're not talking about free fares. We're talking about half-price fares. A city with the resources of New York can afford this. It can be phased in over a couple years, and it should be started now.
So the issue is really that people are becoming criminalized for not being able to afford the metro fares. People are looking for areas where there are no attendants so that they can jump the fares, not to get away with anything, but because they don't have the money for them.
That's exactly right. This is the criminalization of poverty. And we are in an era in this city when the criminalization of poverty has been enormously exposed. The disproportionate impact of that racially and ethnically has been profoundly exposed, and we have an administration that came in pledging to do something about that, and they have done some things, but it's not enough.
And once people enter that criminal justice system, they're trapped, aren't they?
That's right. That's right. Sometimes people can end up at Rikers Island, where the city pays enormous amounts of money to house them, and where they are in jeopardy. The former chief judge of the state led a commission that recently concluded that Rikers is so badly broken it cannot possibly be fixed, as you know.
The Lipman Commission,
and has to be phased out and closed. And sometimes people are being sent there for stuff as minor as fare evasion. It's the criminalization of poverty. It is entirely unnecessary. It is antithetical to the values of this city, and it needs to stop now.
And, you know, I worry about students. I worry about students in the summer who are going to their jobs or even going to day camp, and they can't afford, or going to some, you know, work-study program and can't afford the fares. I do not understand why there are not free Metro cards for students all year.
That's right. That is a piece of this could also be extending the student Metro card so they work both around the clock and around the year. But that would be only a piece of it. That would only address students, as you know. And this issue is much broader than that. This involves all low-income New Yorkers. And there are many hundreds of thousands of them. And we have a glittering, wealthy city. And we need to take care of our own and not send people into the criminal justice system for doing what any of us would do under those circumstances.
So you're calling on the mayor to move away from the unnecessary fare evasion prosecutions and from fines, and you want him to prioritize funding for the half-price Metro cards in the fiscal year 18 budget.
That's exactly right, and the council's budget includes a $50 million down payment toward this effort. That is a very reasonable, responsible first step, and we're calling on the administration to agree with it and include it in the city budget for FY18.
Okay, well, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for your interest.
Craig Levine with the Bronx Defenders. You can find out more about the Fair Fare campaign by going to Riders New York. RidersNY.org. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York. Chelsea Manning was released from federal prison today. She tweeted out a photo of her first steps of freedom wearing a new pair of black Converse sneakers. And today an album, Hugs for Chelsea, was released. Here's a cut by Evan Greer with Fight for the Future, which works to protect freedom of the internet for the public good. Greer stayed in contact with Manning throughout her ordeal in prison.
So we drink and we smoke and we walk. TV. They say don't take your life so seriously. I say this is the only way that I know how to be. 'Cause we need passion, not fashion. We need food, not lawns. We need action, not factions. We need everyone here to be singing along. We need stories, not glory. We need friends, not fans. We need guitars, not rock stars. We need more than just loud trucks, straight white male punk bands. So let's destroy out of love and build out of anger. Get our heads out of our asses. See our lives are in danger. 'Cause the world as we know it is not gonna last forever. These could be the last days. So let's spend them together.
Evan Greer with Never Surrender. Greer says Chelsea's courage knows no bounds. Her release is a testament to the power of grassroots organizing and a victory for freedom of expression and human rights. The online album to benefit Chelsea Manning and pay for her basic living expenses as she transitions back into the world is at hugsforchelsea.bandcamp.com. hugsforchelsea.bandcamp.com. It features prominent musicians like Thurston Moore and Amanda Palmer and Graham Nash, who wrote, "Chelsea Manning is one of my heroes. Anyone who has the courage to disturb the status quo, to rock the boat as she did, is very brave. And what she did was show some truth to the American people about what the government was doing in our name." I'll leave you now with Graham Nash and James Raymond with Almost Gone. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.